Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and this is Our Community. On March 27th, 2024, U.S. Magistrate Judge Mark Clark ruled in favor of St. Timothy's Episcopal Church in Brookings in their lawsuit against the City of Brookings for violating its rights to freely practice its religious teachings to feed and care for the poor among us. You may recall that in April of 2021, a petition was submitted to the City Council from about 24 of St. Tim's neighbors, petitioning the city to, quote, get rid of the homeless that congregate around St. Timothy's. In response, in October of 2021, city staff enacted an ordinance restricting churches from providing more than 2 free lunches per week, and then only with a conditional use permit. St. Timothy's pushed back, saying that they could not abide by this ordinance as it interfered with their mandated religious practices of caring for the less fortunate. When the city remained adamant in their position, St. Timothy's and the Episcopal Diocese filed suit in federal court. The legal jousting began. Along the way, the U.S. Department of Justice weighed in for St. Timothy's, but the attorneys for the city were unfazed. On March 27th, the judge ruled in favor of St. Tim's and chided the city for enacting the ordinance. In his remarks, the judge said, "The homeless are not vagrants, but are citizens in need. This is a time for collaboration, not ill-conceived ordinances that restrict care and resources for vulnerable people in our community." Pretty strong words. So today, I'm joined in the studio by Father Bernie Lindley, the pastor of St. Timothy's Episcopal Church, and Robert O'Sullivan, a congregant and former minister and strong supporter of St. Tim's. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you, Candace.
Thank you.
Robert, are you a former minister? Can somebody be a former minister? I wrote that last night, and I'm thinking, is that accurate?
Well, I was a minister, and technically the church body in which I was a minister, I resigned from, so you might question what my current status is, but Father Bernie always calls me Pastor Robert.
Oh, I like that. So, I like that, Pastor Robert. I like that.
I think once a pastor, always a pastor.
Always a pastor.
With some notable exception.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well,
Reverend Jim Jones. I'm not going to sell his Kool-Aid.
Well, should someone be defrocked, right? It happens. And sometimes people will renounce their holy orders. So.
Right.
In those cases, but
well, I quietly kind of was disappointed with my former church, and I was in tension with it most of my life, so I just withdrew from being on the clergy status or on their roll book.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So you're Pastor Bernie as Vicar. Well as Father Bernie.
Yeah, so I have a lot of titles.
What is your title?
So when I sign letters, I'm the Reverend Bernie Lindley, and then Father Bernie is certainly because I'm a priest.
Yep.
And then I am a pastor, and I'm also a minister of Word and Sacrament, I suppose, which is.
And you're a fisherman.
Well, yeah, and our crab season just got over for us. There's people who are still crabbing, but not us. We had to cut our losses there toward the end of this month, the end of March.
Not a good season.
Not for us, it wasn't. I was very disappointed. Oh. But you know what? There are plenty of other people that did very, very well to the north of us. Good. Up in Astoria, we call it conking them. They conked them up there.
Well, last year was a great year for you.
It's the year before was the great year.
Year before, really?
Yeah.
Time is just flying by.
But last year was fine. It's just the year before that was
awesome.
That was the good year that we
had. Right.
It was the best year we'd ever had.
Yes. Because you would oftentimes do your compline from the boat.
Yeah. Like, and I did that this winter as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That must be really interesting to be on the boat and the seas are doing whatever they're doing and you're trying to talk.
I don't have any problem talking.
I'm so glad to hear that. So let's talk a little bit about this stuff because I've been present for a lot of it, and it's been a long ordeal. I mean, it's been 2 years, right?
Or longer.
Or longer, yeah. So that's a long time. Yeah, that's right, because I think, yes, 21 was when they started talking about, that's when the petition got to them.
Was April of 21?
April in 21, yeah.
Okay. And October, so we're coming on 3 years
was when they did the ordinance.
Okay.
Which, yeah. I mean, I was there for the workshop, which was really interesting. You know, they had all the other churches there, and it was in the middle of COVID, so it was kind of astounding to me that everybody showed up in person.
Well, I didn't. I was on Zoom. Yeah,
absolutely.
And that was in the EOC.
Yes.
And you know, we had our diocesan chancellor present with me.
Yep.
Because we knew that it was going to be contentious.
Right.
And we had legal advice, well thought out legal advice going through this whole process.
Right.
So we didn't take any of this. None of this was like some sort of like an emotional thing, our emotional reaction.
Right.
All of this was well thought out, deliberate, in consultation with legal advice all the way through the process.
It kind of baffles me that the attorneys for the city could not get that this was a violation of your First Amendment rights, first of all, but certainly, you know, it turned out that it was the RLUIPA statute.
Well, it could be that these cases don't happen in Oregon. And so maybe it's just a lack of, the public record just doesn't contain this kind of information, perhaps, when it comes to informing, legal decisions.
It might be helpful. I've worn two other hats besides being a minister. I was both a social studies teacher and a English teacher. And a little about the history of RLUIPA. There were complaints.
Which is what?
Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act.
Okay.
The religious land use is obvious. The institutionalized persons has to do with people in mental institutions,
right,
and prisons, and what their rights are,
right,
regarding practicing religion. And this, there were in the late 1990s some court decisions that made the whole field murky. And two large bills were passed, and another one on general rights, and then one specifically on land use and institutionalized persons.
Right.
It passed both houses of Congress unanimously.
Wow.
In the Senate, its main advocates were probably the most liberal senator, Ted Kennedy, and one of the most conservative, the man from Utah.
Orrin Hatch.
Orrin Hatch.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I remembered that.
And it passed unanimously by voice vote.
Wow.
So you don't just say, well, that's a federal law, we don't have to pay any attention to.
Right.
And it specifically says to mess around with people's religious life, you have to have a compelling state interest. And not only that, that it's the least restrictive way of meeting that compelling state interest. And that turned the tides on how much local governments could do regarding churches and their land use.
Yeah, and I would think that they would know that.
No, well, I didn't know it.
Yeah, well, I had never heard of RLUIPA, you go.
That was enacted some 20 years ago, and I don't know how often it comes up in different court proceedings, but when we started on this journey, I wasn't familiar with that particular federal law. Learned a little bit about it since then.
Right.
But I don't think this is something that comes up real often.
Right.
So, although increasingly it may, yes, across the nation right now.
Increasingly, yes. I mean, Grants Pass is dealing with something similar.
Related, and yeah.
I mean, there are a bunch of churches across the nation.
I probably shouldn't speculate, but I think that had a lot to do with the Eighth Amendment, with cruel and unusual punishment, what's going on there.
Okay.
And then that'll be, I think it's on the docket for the Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
In April of
This year?
Next month.
Soon, yeah.
Woo.
Well, April 22nd, I think, when they, and they expect a verdict, you know, a ruling by...
the fall.
Well, or maybe in the summer. But that has to do with... That's based on what happened in Boise a few years ago, Martin versus the city of Boise. And then the people in Grants Pass wanted to see what the limits of that ruling were. Hmm. And then, and now they're appealing it to the
Supreme Court. Came up with an ordinance which banned someone having a blanket or a sleeping bag
right.
or a pillow on public property.
Right. Right. I think that's the kind of stuff that they're talking about.
Okay. Fascinating.
So we'll see what all happens there because that's, you know, that's going to have for our entire nation, you know,
yeah,
national
big
consequences.
I was really intrigued by how strong the judge was with his words. It was like, first of all, it was a summary judgment. So what he did was basically said, you know, city of Brookings, you don't got anything.
The law is not with you and the facts are not with you. And pounding doesn't help.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And it is kind of like, okay, you know, and I would think that they would have known that they were going to have a problem when the Department of Justice sided with St. Timothy's. I mean, that for me, when I heard the Department of Justice had come out in favor of St. Tim's, I was like, well, then we're done, right? I mean...
Well, that's what I thought.
Who goes up against the feds?
Yeah. What was kind of neat is that not only did they give an amicus brief, friend of the court
mm-hmm.
Brief, but they came in person.
Yeah.
When we did the oral arguments for this motion back February 15th, the Department of Justice flew somebody in from Washington, D.C., and I got to, you know, meet him a little bit, talk to him a little bit.
That can't be your average, you know,
I don't know.
To fly somebody in.
Yeah, that seemed to me a good sign for us.
Yeah, I would say so.
He even came up with an unusual new argument for the case. The judge didn't mention it. But the Methodist Church in Spent River puts on or staffs the luncheon every Monday.
Right.
And they're in a different state. So he said, oh, we have an interstate commerce issue here. You're depriving religious rights of people from California as well as from Oregon. It's kind of amusing, basically.
It is, but it's like it's the.
That's not, by the way, that's not what the case hinged on, of course.
No.
But it was just an additional, like, interesting
right.
component.
Right.
And by the way, too, to clarify about the Methodists, that it's not strictly our Methodist friends who serve that meal. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's parishioners for St. Timothy's and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's we call it Methodist Mondays, but it's not like the Methodists could. Serve in a different location than St. Timothy's.
Right.
It's more kind of like...
a group effort.
They're the lead group, kind of.
Yeah. So I thought it was really interesting when the judge made a point of saying that the people that you assist are not vagrants.
Yeah.
And I know that phrase came from an email exchange, I believe, interdepartmental.
Are you talking about something that might have come up in discovery? Because I didn't.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It did. Because they had gotten all of the emails between the former mayor and Tony Barron and Ed Schreiber, and that term vagrants.
And
the
petition itself used yes. it several times.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go, huh, Pastor Robert. I almost called him Father Robert, because in our tradition,
yeah.
That sounds like you're giving me a paternity suit.
Yeah, it's not.
Let's hope not, right?
But, you know, there are terms that I think are demeaning to folks. One is transient because the people we serve, very few of them are transiting through the area.
Right.
In fact, in most cases, they've lived here for a number of years, at least five. A lot of them have gone to high school here. They've gone through our educational system. And in some cases, they're multi-generational. One of the people that we serve has, Checo Indian heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's certainly not vagrant or transitory.
Right.
You're not a transient if your great, 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 great grandmother lived here.
Yeah. No.
That's exactly. That. So that's the kind of stuff that I find that offensive to call people transients and vagrants.
Well, I think vagrant is definitely a term that is meant to be derogatory. I mean, I can't imagine a way of using that term that isn't derogatory.
I agree.
I mean, why would you call somebody a vagrant?
Bummer.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bummer that somebody would use that choice of words.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So instead of what it clearly indicates to me is that instead of seeing that person as a human being who might be in difficult straits, what they're doing is looking down on that person as a lower life form than they are.
One of the things that Pastor Robert and I think about a lot is dehumanizing people.
Yes.
It's our faith tells us to do the opposite.
Yes.
Our faith tells us that everyone is created in the image of God, and to do something that would dehumanize someone would actually be an offense against God.
Agreed.
And you know, interestingly, I was raised Catholic and got away from Catholicism as rapidly as I could when I became an adult. Some of us are just not meant for organized religion. But the values are still my values. I mean, those, I don't consider somebody less of a human being because they don't have nice clothes or, you know, they're forced to live outside or they don't have enough food. It doesn't make them less of a human being. It means that they're in trouble and they need some help.
They are in trouble. And, you know, their trouble started back in their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
In most of the cases with the people that we work with at the church, they had terrible childhood.
Yeah.
Their upbringing was, to say inconsistent would be an understatement. Most of these people experienced physical assault, sexual assault, inconsistency in the extreme when it came to having their needs met.
Right.
And so they grew up without trusting anyone.
Right.
And then the school system, in a lot of cases, has failed folks.
Yep.
We've had a lot of students here locally, but nationwide, the school system has oftentimes failed people, students. And so, and then also you have people with traumatic brain injuries. You have people that are... just because you were autistic as a child doesn't mean that you grow out of it.
Oh,
an autistic child becomes
don't.
An autistic adult.
Yes, exactly.
So we have a lot of the people we serve, they might be schizophrenic, they might be bipolar. Mm-hmm. It's trauma induced. A lot of them, I don't know if any of them do not have PTSD.
Right.
There's chronic depression. The list goes on. But then on top of that, you take the traumatic brain injury perhaps, or you take... some other condition that people were born with. And by the way, none of this is the fault of the person who's experiencing it. They didn't choose any of that.
No.
And nor the economics of how expensive it is to live around here.
That's right.
Well, that's part of the problem too. Kids who grew up here that can't afford to live here.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's terrible.
And they say, well, move away to some, I mean, you know, I've heard folks say, well, move somewhere where you can't afford it. Well, this is their home. And not only that, who's going to be working in the service sector jobs if all of the people move away that can't, that aren't wealthy?
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. And the term that has lately been used a fair amount is neurodivergent, which, you know, is this spectrum of where we all are in terms of our neurology. So, you know, some of us are here and some of us are there and we're different. We're not all the same. We are not cookie cutters. I mean, we're not.
Well, our life experiences
Yes.
You know, we don't all have the same life experiences.
No. And our wiring is slightly different. I mean, it just is. My grandson is neurodivergent, and he needs special schooling. That's what he needs.
So now think about this. Should he not be able to receive that special schooling,
yep.
what's going to happen to him?
Yep.
So fortunately, he's being raised by loving parents. Now, let's take the same kid and put them in a dysfunctional home. Yep. Where are they going to be when they're 30 years old?
Yes, exactly. In really bad shape.
I want to say a little about St. Tim's itself. I'm a rather recent member. In fact, in a way, the city council recruited me.
I'm sure they'll be thrilled to know that.
And go there someday between 9 and 12, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and see all the amazing work happening. Not one person works full-time at St. Tim's, but they have a deacon, they have a chaplain in training, they have people who know about how to help people get on health care and other services that are available to them. These are all possible, and they're efficient at it. And they're loving and showing dignity and respect. And people ranging with issues ranging from food and personal survival to harassment and all that, if they know that St. Tim's has people who can help them, they go there. And that's what churches should be about. And they recruited me so effectively that I have become kind of a strong advocate for them.
Oh, I know. you've recorded several things right here in this station about how great St. Tim's is, and, you know, it's unfortunate the city decided to go toe-to-toe. It's...
Well, I wish that this whole thing would have never had to happen.
Yep, me too.
I wish that we would have been able to talk this through a long time, you know, before all this other, all the things
happened. Well, and when you look at the way it happened, so the petition came to the council, and according to one of the newspaper reports that I read, the petition was like the third thing that happened, that there were initially conversations between the former mayor and the former city manager and Tony Barron about how it was just not okay what was going on and at St. Tim's.
But remember what was happening that they were saying wasn't okay. It was the car camping, all of that stuff.
They asked you to do.
The petition, the conversation, all was revolving. It wasn't revolving around the feeding ministry. It wasn't revolving around the other ministries that Pastor Robert was just talking about when it comes to, the spiritual care that we provide during our office hours and the other different various forms of alms that we provide. It was the car camping turned into... I don't want to use the word chaos, but it got unwieldy.
Get a little specific about what that was supposed to be.
So certainly the goal behind the car camping was, you know, we're in a global pandemic. We wanted people to, rather than have people wandering around the community and not able to access care because restrooms were closed. The library was closed. There wasn't any place for people to be. Certainly if they were unhoused, there was nowhere for them to be. And so the city council asked us to provide a place for people to be. Three
car camps.
And
not
other
just
churches
us.
As well.
The 15, there are 15 churches in the city limits, and they asked all 15 of them to participate. And we did. No one else figured that was a good idea for them. And we provided access to restroom, garbage can, sanitation, and then had the people in the cars. And over the course of time, their mental health disintegrated because there they are, you know, in a car, and there's still this global pandemic. And it got, you know, when we moved them in, the pandemic hadn't quite affected Brookings to that point. You know, the Delta wave hadn't come through yet.
Right.
And then months and months later, the Delta wave finally happens. And we found out we weren't immune to COVID-19 yep. after all.
Yep.
Because we were kind of, I think, getting cocky about it in our
community. Yeah, we thought we were going to be able to slide.
Yeah, we were hoping.
Yep.
But then, and don't forget, people died during that Delta wave. Numerous different people in our community died.
And the yep. town was shutting down.
Yes, it was.
As well, we had to.
Yeah.
And so we have these people, they're in their cars, their mental health is starting to deteriorate, and we have no access to the behavioral health people.
Yep.
We have no access to mental health people. We have no access to the crisis intervention people. We have no access to the Department of Human Services. And the only people that we, the only folks that could address the issues were the police. And the police weren't really all that keen to put somebody in the county jail.
No, of course.
So we ended up with kind of a worst case scenario yep. as far as how do we meet the needs of these people.
Yep.
So there were some people behaving in ways that were erratic. You know, there was a couple of our guests came to blows with one another. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that everybody knows that eventually those two women did end up in the state mental health. In the state mental hospital.
They both did finally get
eventually,
the help
finally,
they, yeah.
they did.
Yeah.
It didn't happen timely.
Right.
It didn't happen until after it was just horrific what they had to live through.
Right.
And I feel bad for those women, but I also feel bad for the people who had to, you know, be subjected to
yes, of course.
Their mental health breakdown
right.
that they had. But you know, that's not we weren't the we didn't cause that.
No.
We did what we could to try to mitigate.
Right.
And when the petition came, we closed. You know, the petition was circulated in April. Took a little bit of time for it to get to city council. We got into negotiations with them. This was before the lawsuit, so we could still have conversations, mm-hmm. you know, face-to-face. Well, so to speak, it was still a pandemic, but we could still have conversations.
Right.
And in June, so a couple, 3 months later, we, I guess it was only 2 months later, we terminated the car camping mm-hmm. and things at that point were starting to get better. You know, mm-hmm. things were opening up again. Mm-hmm. And, so we responded, you know, I was going to say responsibly, but we did what we could to bring to a close yeah. the thing that didn't work the way we wish it would have.
Yes. And you were asked to do that. I mean,
yeah, it wasn't our idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, we didn't go to the city and say, right. hey, could we put people in our parking lot?
Right.
No, the city came to us.
Yes.
And we said, exactly. that makes sense.
Yep.
Let's do that.
Yep. Yep.
And then after months and months and months of these people being there, that's when things
deteriorated.
Yeah.
Of
and
worse.
And we can all understand why.
Without
yes. the, without support from the community partners that we collaborate with now, because at the time we couldn't collaborate because
yeah.
of the pandemic, but we have strengthened the bonds with all of those other organizations now. And I think that there's we would be much more successful in the current yes. context. Not that we would ever do that again in that location, mm-hmm. but the different things that are going to be happening in our community now as we go forward are going to be much more successful than what that was.
Well, and the reality is that we were in the midst of a pandemic that we had never experienced before. None of us were doing very well.
And you know,
none of us.
So we were feeding 6 days a week. Certainly we were.
Yeah.
But we did that because we wanted to make sure that people were getting fed.
Yes.
In the middle of all yeah. that chaos.
Exactly.
And some of the other congregations hadn't quite, they were still figuring out how to move forward mm-hmm. with the to-go meals and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. And we were kind of ahead of the curve on that. So we picked up the slack until they were able to come back in to their regular rotation. And so when they, but the feeding ministry was never really the issue.
It never was. And I remember the same neighbors who brought that petition to city council showed up at a council meeting sometime when the council was deciding to enact this ordinance. And I remember them saying, this isn't going to help. Why are you doing this ordinance? This isn't going to help, because it was lunch. That
no
wasn't the
day.
Problem. The problem was at night.
Right.
I mean, yeah. So even the neighbors were pretty darn clear that this ordinance was useless.
And then you know that ever since that, we have a curfew at 6 o'clock. Nobody can be, and if they're attending a meeting, they can be there because meetings are at different times.
Right.
But nobody can be on the church grounds unless they're there for a specific reason after 6 o'clock. And we had to pick that time so that it was kind of like a compromise time, like what would make the most sense, considering the fact that our Sunday meal needs to be later on in the day. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the Sunday meal would be as late as 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because we're trying to figure out, like in the summer, what makes the most sense for that meal.
Right.
Because we tried to do it at noon on Sundays, but there's too much overlap with the worship service.
Right.
Because my worship services go for like 3.5 hours.
It seems that way.
It must be good.
I know I'm done when everybody's already left.
Well, at least they leave quietly, right?
And hope the bathroom isn't crowded.
But we needed to have a little bit of a gap between the worship service and the and so that people could prepare the meal, because that's one of the things too, is when people want to be preparing the meal, well, I don't want them to have to do that during the worship service.
Sure.
So absolutely, it made sense to get a little space between. Yep. There, and so that's why we had that, and it's at 3 o'clock now on Sunday afternoons, but we had it at 4 o'clock for a time. And then it gets dark in the winter and we're...
Yeah.
But if the meal is going to be at 4 o'clock, then it made sense to do the curfew at 6.
Right.
And, but that's enforced by the Brookings Police Department.
Right. That's not on you. Whoever shows up at the church after 6 o'clock is not getting in.
Well, and even if I did live next door to the church, or even if I lived at the church, how would I know when I'm sound asleep that there's someone who's there?
Yeah.
But the police, you know, they're patrolling by all the time, because right. They do.
Right.
And they can address the issue as they see it, because once we entered into the Property Watch program, the police have carte blanche. Mm-hmm. To trespass anybody they find there. You know, if there was somebody there at 1 o'clock in the morning, whether the person's making noise or not, they can trespass that person off of the church grounds, and then they notify us the next day. And we, you know, make sure that our whole staff knows that person has ran afoul of us. Mm-hmm. Because when we end up with an impaired relationship, we can't.
Right.
It hampers our ability. We can still work with them, but we have to work with them off the premises.
Right.
We've done that many times, by the way.
What concerns me in the whole situation is that if the city council had a high school civic level of understanding of the law, they never would have passed the feeding stuff, and they certainly never would have passed the abatement issue. The abatement issue basically works on the assumption that the city has a right to say what should go on in a church.
You're
and,
exactly
and
correct.
That when it goes on, how long it goes on, who's doing it, and that's none of their business.
Well, I don't like the idea of somebody trying to define what alms are. Mm-mm. Because uh-huh. When somebody comes in and they use our shower, that's a form of alms. Mm-hmm. When somebody comes in because they need help with their electric bill, that's alms.
Uh-huh. Sure.
When somebody is behind on their rent, when somebody has their car breakdown and they can't get to work, and we buy that part for them, that's alms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's certainly true that when somebody comes in and they need help navigating a complicated system like applying for Medicaid, that when we spend our time with that person, that's a type of alms as well.
Absolutely.
It might not be monetary, but alms does not, as far as I'm concerned anyway, and hopefully everybody would agree, that alms does not have to involve the exchange of money.
And I don't think that the government has a right to legislate what that looks like.
Define alms, yeah.
Yep.
I really think,
or even define what worship is.
Or what a church is.
Or what a church is.
Yeah.
Especially if you're only using the first definition, right?
Well,
it's not a building, okay? It's not a building.
Things get pretty
heated and intense.
They do.
Yes.
And certainly I have people that blame me for the homeless crisis that we have in our area.
Yes.
But you know that it's not just our area. The homeless crisis is certainly throughout the West Coast.
Absolutely.
And in other parts of the country as well.
Yeah.
But California leads the country for unhoused adults, but Oregon leads the country for unhoused families.
Wow.
So when it comes to children, we actually have that distinction.
Wow.
And we've seen that at St. Timothy's. We have seen an increase over the last 2 years of children that are that live in their cars or live on the ground.
That's just sad.
It is sad. And fortunately, we've been able to respond accordingly. And actually, over the course of the year 2024, we have been directly involved in getting something like 15 or 18 people housed.
Great.
And of those people, at least three of those households included children.
Right. Because that's the trauma. That's an example of the trauma that produces traumatized adults who can't cope.
Yeah.
That's the trauma right there.
Well, stability, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't know where you're going to be sleeping from one night to the next, if you don't know, if you don't feel secure in your ability to be fed tomorrow or whatever the thing is, it's going to create all kinds of mental health issues. So that's...
Well, I knew that I always had my own bedroom when I was growing up. I had my own bedroom, and I knew that, you know, if I was upset or having a bad day or I just got yelled at by my mom or whatever, I could go be by myself, close my door in my bedroom and recover, right? Recover.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a home, you don't have that.
So the criticism that I get is that we're enabling people. We're
enabling them to eat?
Well, and it, yeah.
A better life.
And we know that that's, you know, right. what the reality is. But there are people that think that we make it too easy for folks to just stay unhoused.
Continue being homeless, and, as if that were what they wanted.
And so we have several different guiding principles. You know, well, our primary guiding principle is that all people are created in God's image and that they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, it's very important to us that we do not create dependency. We don't want somebody to become dependent upon us for their financial well-being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the meals are pretty sustainable. I'm not worried that we're going to run out of capacity to provide meals. And I'm not worried about our, I don't think that we're going to run out of capacity for providing for people's hygiene needs. But if somebody, like say they need gas money, and every week or every month they're coming to me for gas money, that's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
We got to come up with some other plan there. But, our goal, if somebody is addicted to a substance, our goal is to help them get to rehab, which we have done on many occasions. And we rejoice when that happens.
But it's not easy. You know, I mean, we talk about, you know, getting them help in various ways, but actually finding a rehab facility that will take you in is not easy. Getting mental health help of any kind is not easy in this county. It's just not.
And that's why we are trying to strengthen our partnerships with the behavioral health people. You know, we're talking about ADAPT.
Yep.
And also with the Oregon Department of Human Services,
right.
But also with other organizations. There's a thing called Bay Area First Step.
Yes.
There's another thing called Boulder Advocacy.
Right.
There are other groups that we're working with in addition to the ones that we see most commonly.
Yeah, good.
One thing about St. Tim's is, as an Episcopal church, it's a liturgical church, which means a lot of words. And they do a good job of having variety and not the same every time. I mean, there are some basics, the Nicene Creed and the Lord's Prayer. But there's one thing unusually basic there, and that is a prayer that the church be helped in finding a facility in town that could be used for transitional housing and other things to help the homeless.
Mm.
And in Brookings, that's something that the past city council and various forms of it have always resisted.
Mm-hmm.
Would you talk about why the church is wanting to do that?
See, you know what the thing is, Pastor Robert, is that the rungs are too far apart. For somebody that's either sleeping on the ground or living in their car, how are they going to go from there into an apartment when a studio apartment is $1,100 a month?
That's a lot.
Maybe more? To get a room into somebody's house is $800 a month just to rent a room in somebody else's house. The Chetco Inn, I think, is up to $750 a month now. If you have a family and you need to get into, say, a two-bedroom apartment, what's that, $1,400-$1,500 a month?
Probably, if you're lucky.
The good news for the people who are on that kind of trajectory, you know, the few that are on that trajectory, is that the Brookings Core Response is very helpful when it comes to helping offset moving in costs. Yeah. You know, we're talking about deposits and first month's rent and that sort of thing. But I think I think that our community, I think not just us, but we all think in the United States of America, we think that there's this Section 8 HUD voucher program, and that if somebody needs a house, they can get issued from their local housing authority this voucher, and now they're going to have housing.
Were that easy?
Yes.
The problem is that the landlord has to accept it, but also that voucher has to cover the cost of that rent.
Yeah.
And it's a good program. It's just there's nowhere to actually use the voucher.
Right.
So there could be all kinds of people with these vouchers, but no way to actually use the voucher.
I mean, you end up on a waiting list, and once the waiting list, I mean, once your voucher expires, you're kicked off the waiting list. So
yes.
If you haven't made it into a place,
yes.
By the time your voucher expires.
And it kind of makes sense a little bit because, well, this person wasn't able to do it. Let's give another person a chance and maybe they'll be more successful. Well, that's in theory, that kind of sounds okay.
If but there's in practicality, enough housing, maybe that is real, but
yeah.
Not in
practicality.
Place where there's no housing.
Yeah. So,
no, I know.
It's a very, the way that all this is set up is just really a drag.
Yeah. And it's just, it doesn't work. I mean, I think that what we saw during COVID was the safeguards, the safety nets that we all assumed were in place don't actually exist, or their holes in them are so big that you fall right through.
So what we need, what our congregation desires, what Pastor Robert and I desire, is to see the rungs on that ladder to have those spacings put closer together. Because to make it from where people are now up to where they need to be, there needs to be like five different rungs in between so that they can more gradually and more successfully get to where they need to be. And, you know, I'm a housing first guy. There's a thing called the housing first model. I believe that you can't send somebody to rehab and have them complete a 28-day program only to just throw them back out into the wild. It's like, man, you had great success, and now you've been sober for, you know, maybe as much as a couple of months.
Right.
But sorry about your luck. You're going to be living in
right
the bushes
back out
again
on the street. Yep.
So there needs to be a way better. There needs to be like this transitional type housing stuff that we're thinking about. Let's get them into that at least.
Yep.
But
and there's stuff that's been available elsewhere that Brookings has deliberately ignored or not applied for, and
well, there's a lot of money on the table for grants that don't ever get applied for.
Well, and that gets complicated too, because you know we don't meet the requirements in a lot of cases when it comes to some of those grants. But there's hope.
Of course,
we have people in our community that are doing an outstanding job. Yeah.
And I think we need to say that you know the current city council has inherited these problems, because the past city council was, well, three members of it were effectively recalled because of their stance about keeping Janelle Howard on board. So we've got three brand new city councilors, and they've inherited these problems. Now, I would really hope that they're going to do some serious looking at the problems and some serious thinking about them and asking community members.
Well, I certainly don't admire their, you know, their position that they're in. when it comes to anybody who serves in the public trust, it's thankless. Somebody's going to hate you. The people who do that, I might, you know, I'm very grateful that they're willing to serve on those various different boards. Cause you know, you got like the Port Commission, for instance, mm-hmm. you got the school board, you got mm-hmm. even things like the cemetery board.
Yes.
The people who are willing, and they're, none of them are compensated. They're doing these things because they want to make our community better in the yep. way that they, you know, from what they're, cause we all want to see our community do better. The debate is how do we go about doing
yes.
that? And what I would argue is that we can't just push people out of view. We can't just, because where are you going to push them to? You're going to push them into the National Forest. Well, it turns out the National Forest, you know, they have rules too about how long people can stay there. So we have to be, we're going to, you know, my solution is going to involve this thing like Pastor Robert's talking about where we come up with better options for transitional housing. Because there are ways to, we have success, like I said, we've successfully gotten well over a dozen people, whatever that number was, a dozen and a half people since the beginning of the year housed, and they're living indoors
significant.
Now. And we're talking about permanent housing. We're not talking yeah. about, they're just, I'm not talking about putting people in a hotel room. I'm right. talking about people, putting people in sustainable permanent housing.
Right, right.
And it, unfortunately in our area, that involves travel trailers in a park mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, not always, but in most cases, because right. that's the most affordable place where people can live.
Right.
But space rent will go anywhere from $450, which are the hard ones to find, of course, all the way up to $650 a month or more. And it's still kind of a tough deal.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, we have lots of ideas. We think about this all the time. We brainstorm on it. But I do want to reiterate that we're not trying to enable people to participate in bad behavior. If that were the case, we wouldn't trespass people from the church.
Right.
And we do. We do not tolerate bad behavior, and certainly not violent behavior. So there is, I wish that everyone could understand that it is not our desire to see people do criminal things.
Well, you actually want people to thrive, right?
We do want them to thrive. And
that's right.
And one of the things too, when it comes to addiction, is sometimes better is better. Sometimes, and this has been hard for me to wrap my mind around, but somebody who is perhaps injecting methamphetamine, you know, into their arm, maybe there's a better thing there where there's not sober perhaps, but there's some better thing.
Yes.
And because I'm an abstinence guy, I prefer abstinence. I like it when people are clean from all, you know, mind-altering substances. That's what I prefer. That includes alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I've been free from alcohol my own self for like 25 years or something, right? We've talked about this before. So, but you know what? This is me and my choice.
Right.
There are plenty of other people who have a different set of circumstances. So it could very well be that somebody who is addicted to opiates and instead they're, you know, using marijuana, that's better. So it's not up for me to decide how somebody else lives their life, but, you know, not trying to enable them, not, you know, we're not doing a needle exchange. There's plenty of people, there's plenty of organizations in the country that are doing needle exchanges. We're not doing that, but we certainly do want to encourage people, if they are going to be using drugs,
one thing
to do it safely.
I've observed at St. Tim's is a lot of the, I don't know if you want to say clients or people who come there, are affirmed by just the way they're treated. And they have an opportunity to talk to a real live human being who's not looking at them as scum or any of that, but just being friendly and helpful and loving. And it's a Christian congregation in action that I greatly admire. And I think if you look back at the recent history of Brookings, Brookings would have been far worse off if St. Tim's had not been doing what it did, especially during COVID.
Well, I appreciate that, absolutely. Pastor Robert. And you know, you're right about that too. When somebody comes in for the first time, I spend like, on average, 20 minutes, probably, it's really more like the minimum. I spend 20 minutes getting to know someone,
mm-hmm.
getting to know what their circumstances are, what their challenges are. But getting to know them as a person, not just, it's not, this isn't a business transaction. This is a pastoral transaction, I guess, but it's a pastoral interaction.
Right.
And that's how we're not just trying to like, what's it going to take to get you out of here? It's not like that at all. We want to know the person for who they are, and we want to get to know them, on a first name basis.
Yeah.
We take that very seriously.
And you really have to meet people where they are, you know, to expect them to somehow meet you where you are it's not practical.
I remember when I learned that lesson, because I had to learn that, through an experience that I had when I was doing my chaplaincy training in a VA facility over the one in White City, that sometimes they call it the Dom. In White City. So I was, that's where I did my internship to learn how to do effective pastoral care. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'll just sit in a room and put a sign and, put out the shingle, right?
Yeah.
And if they want to have pastoral care, they'll come in. Huh. What I found out was that people congregated at these particular picnic tables out on the quad. And if I went and sat at that picnic table, I would be able to have opportunities for those conversations. Right. So you got to be where the people are for a fact.
Yes.
And
not just physically, but where they are experientially, where they are philosophically, where they are
non-judgmental,
mentally.
There's a thought, non-judgmental.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the whole idea is to create stability in the lives of vulnerable people. Mm-hmm. That's the whole idea. Not to enable bad behavior.
Right, right. And, it's amazing to me that people who are privileged to have a home and a car and clothing and enough food don't recognize that as a privilege, right? They understand it as what's owed to them because they've worked really hard and, whatever. But all it takes is one disaster. And all of that stuff that is owed to you because you worked so hard for it is gone.
Well, the disaster can be pretty simple. It can be your car won't start and you need to take it to have it fixed.
Yep.
And now, next thing you know, that you got a $2,000 bill, and it's more than that perhaps if it's the transmission. Mm-hmm. And now what are you going to do? You can't get to work. And so it's really a disaster that happens in slow motion.
Yep.
I think for most of the people, it's not that their house burnt down, although that happens in our community too, but it's more like your car didn't start that morning.
Yep.
And now you got to choose. Do you fix the car? Or do you pay the rent?
Yep.
Because without the car, you can't get to work. And without work, you can't pay the rent. So we have all kinds of people that are trying to make hard choices.
And it must be, think about it for a minute, right? Your car doesn't start and immediately what goes through your mind are all of the potential consequences of this, including being homeless. Particularly if you have had that experience,
right?
You know how close you are. And the trauma of that, right? And knowing that it's coming at you and there's nothing you can do.
And when you talk about privilege, it could be as simple as that. If my car doesn't start, I get in my other car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if that car doesn't start, my wife can take me where I need to go.
Right.
Because she has a car too.
Right.
And if there's some problem there, well, it turns out I got a car in reserve.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, I got an extensive Rolodex. I can call people and, I have family support. I have, a large church family that I think would come and help me. We take that for granted though, don't we?
Yes, we do. We take it for granted. Although, interestingly, sometimes you don't, right? Suddenly you've locked your keys in your car and you have to be somewhere in 15 minutes and you're like, oh, who can I call, right?
Well,
Ghostbusters,
turns
right?
Out,
I mean,
well,
that's...
turns out a lot of people call Father Bernie.
I bet they do. I should have called you.
It turns out I've done this on more than one occasion where I've helped people get into their car that they've locked their keys
in. That's funny.
Yeah, I have this. I actually have some tools for the...
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I will remember that. That's the first time in my life.
I wonder if I should have made that public. Pastor Robert, should I have made that public?
We're going to be on the air. Everybody will know.
Yeah, everybody, listen up, Father Bernie.
I have another thing I want to mention is both of you were involved in sort of the birth of Brookings Corps. Mm-hmm. And it kind of started basically at St. Tim's, and it became obvious that they needed more room to do what they do. Do either of you want to say anything about that and St. Tim's role in it?
Well, I got to tell you how proud I am of that organization. They are really, when they picked a good name when they said core, because they are core to the well-being of our community when it comes to the people on the margins. And I have all kinds of hopes, and the direction that they're going right now is exciting for me. And I can't tell you how proud I am of my friend Diana.
Yeah, I couldn't be prouder. I mean, I kind of feel like a mother hen, right? It's like she's done so many good things.
Such a positive force in the community.
And I've watched her go, I've watched that organization go from an idea 3 years ago, an idea in her head, to she's got, you know, like a $5 million budget this year. And she's got that money secured. Those are grants.
But I want to make sure that we're clear that that's not going into her pocket even a little bit.
Oh, no. Yeah. Absolutely not.
They're getting
not.
A very good value. It's
yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, that is all for helping people in the community.
So some of it goes into staffing, but the vast majority of that money is going into caring for people.
But can you imagine going from nothing to, I think she has 10 staff people now. They're local people. So these are 10 people in the community who are now making a living wage.
And helping other people.
Doing something that they love. I mean.
But like I said, the bulk of that money, though, is going into the care for people.
Transitional housing.
Yeah.
Street.
I would hate to think somebody would get the wrong idea and think that this is, because there are people who think that homelessness is an industry where people are profiting. Yeah. There are people who think that.
Right. Right.
And
some lawyers who profit from it.
But let me tell you know, my monthly salary from the church is $1,817 a month. So that's what, $1,817.
You're not going to get rich on that, Bernie.
And I have no desire to because, you know, that's why I fish.
Yep.
If I'm going to get, that's the part where I get rich is when I'm fishing sometimes.
Maybe. In a good way.
On 1 year out of 10. Mm.
So I hate to tell you guys, but we are under 2 minutes, which means we are out of time.
Okay.
So this has been a delight. Thank you.
You didn't even
both.
Shuffle all your papers around
there,
Candace.
I didn't, and I've got all of these things.
We didn't even get any, we just kind of scratched the surface on some of this.
But I'm just so thrilled that things are going the way they're going. We'll see what happens with the abatement issue and, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you very much, Bob, for showing up. Really, really delightful. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. Whatever your opinion about the homeless, it is your tax dollars that are paying the city's attorney's legal fees. When the Department of Justice weighs in against the city, isn't it time to rethink the wisdom of what Judge Clark called ill-conceived ordinances? Is it really in our best interest to have our hard-earned tax money spent frivolously? I'm Candace Michelle, and this is Our Community.